Who is sovereign?
In a speech that the Chief Justice gave in 2002, Her Honor stated that the rule of law exerts an authoritative claim on all aspects of selfhood. And then she also says, the authority claimed by state written law touches on all aspects of human life and citizenship. So you might paraphrase what she said in this way. There is not a square inch in the whole domain of our human existence over which the state, who is sovereign over all, does not cry mine.
This week, a special full edition of Lighthouse News, a recap of ARPA's fall tour, which was themed around the question, who is sovereign? From September 25th to October 20th, ARPA staff made 20 stops across the country with presentations to Christian schools during the day. More than 1,400 students saw those presentations, and another 20 stops during the evenings for ARPA supporters. Total attendance at those stops was at over 1,500. The tour was divided into two parts. The stops on the eastern portion, from Winnipeg to Ottawa, were hosted by Law and Policy Director Andre Schutten and Grassroots Manager Colin Postma. The western part of the tour, from BC to Regina, featured Executive Director Mark Penninga and staff lawyer John Sikkema. All the presentations basically followed the same script. We know there were a lot of folks who couldn't make it out to hear the material, so for those people, and for those who might want to hear it again, we're featuring a recording of two of the highlights of one of the evening tour stops, the one in Vernon, BC. Each of the presentations was about 2 hours long, and of course we don't have that much time, so this is an edited version of the beginning and the end of the presentations. Each evening started with a brief devotional on God's sovereignty as illustrated in the book of Daniel, and how that sovereignty played out in the life of Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar. And then John Sikkema presented on the central theme of the tour, the matter of sovereignty.
Our question that we're looking at tonight is, who is sovereign? And of course, I think we already know who's sovereign. But in our lives, of course, we encounter different people and different institutions that claim authority. And the question we have to look at then is, who or what institution, what people have authority in any particular situation to direct my actions and your actions? A good place to start when we're looking at that kind of authority is question 104 of the Heidelberg Catechism. That question asks what God requires in the fifth commandment, right? And it says that I show honor, love, and faithfulness to my father and mother and to all those in authority over me, since it is God's will to govern us by their hand. We need a framework to help us grasp God's design for social order. How does God delegate authority and to what extent? And a helpful framework is called sphere sovereignty. Now, God has created and mandated three basic spheres of authority. The sphere of the state is sovereign in matters properly within its jurisdiction, as given and defined by God. So we think of basic things like criminal law, maintaining a fair and impartial justice system, punishing wrongdoing, protecting the innocent. We see that from passages like Romans 13, 1 Peter 2, Psalm 72, Isaiah 1. You can probably think of others as well. Note that here in Canada, there are some obvious examples where the state is not fulfilling its duty. The state does a lot, but there are some basic things, like protecting the lives of the unborn, that it doesn't do. That's pretty basic. Protect the lives of the innocent. Our government does nothing in that regard. The state also, in our country, recently legalized euthanasia and is looking now to expand it. The state is basically allowing some people to take the lives of others if they're considered sick enough. So those are some obvious failings. Now, another institution is the church, another sphere of sovereignty. And the church, of course, is sovereign over matters of doctrine and matters of church membership and church discipline. And this responsibility, again, is given to the church directly by God. We see Jesus tell Peter that the keys of the kingdom are given to him. The keys of the kingdom are, of course, the preaching of the gospel and the exercise of church discipline. And as the story of Peter and John in Acts 4 teaches us, we are called to obey God, even when it might cost us something. One of the keys of the kingdom is the preaching of the gospel. And when Peter and John are told to stop preaching the gospel, they respond that we cannot but speak of what we have seen and heard. And they challenge the Sanhedrin, you decide whether it's right for us to obey you or to obey God. Similarly, in church discipline, there is an accountability for the church to do its duty, and the church is accountable to Christ. Another sphere is the family. Issues of child rearing, including education and the discipline of children, fall within this sphere. And we see this in passages like Deuteronomy 6, Ephesians 6 and the entire book of Proverbs. It starts with many addresses to a son to obey and listen to and learn the wisdom of his father. Now, the spheres intersect or overlap. And it's not always easy and clear-cut to determine who is sovereign or who has authority and to what degree in any particular circumstance. So consider this question. Who has authority over the van ride to church? So let's just pull a news headline here. Family in minivan breaks world land speed record in attempt to get to church on time. This is from the reputable Babylon Bee. Some of you may know it. For those of you who don't, you might want to double-check my sources here. But the question is, who has authority in this situation? Now, if you're like me and you've developed a pretty keen eye for police cars, you're probably thinking the state has authority here. And that's true, but it's actually all three spheres of authority at work here. Children obey their parents by getting in the van, going to church with them. The family obeys the authority of the church in the church calling them to join in a worship service and to hear the preaching of the word. And dad can and probably should obey the laws of the state on the way to church. And all this happens at the same time. And whenever you can obey all, you must obey all. These are legitimate exercises of authority as delegated by God. So there is overlap, but there's also clear boundaries between the spheres. And the boundaries are critical. And history teaches us that when we ignore these boundaries, or when one sphere pretends they don't exist, trouble happens. Now, some of you may be familiar with Abraham Kuyper. He's largely responsible for developing this concept of sphere sovereignty as a system of theology. He really takes the biblical emphasis on the sovereignty of God, Calvin's emphasis on the sovereignty of God, and then says, how does that now play out in different areas of life? And this is the concept we get is sphere sovereignty. And the key to a biblical understanding of sphere sovereignty is that all the spheres are under the authority of Christ. And this is where that famous quote from Kuyper comes in, where he says, there is not a square inch in the whole domain of our human existence over which Christ, who is sovereign over all, does not cry, mine. So our identity is in Jesus Christ as Lord. That's our leading identity. And that's who claims sovereignty over us. So we always lead with that identity. We are Christians who may also be fathers or mothers, sons or daughters in the sphere of family. We are under Christ's authority, while we also exercise authority in the state as police officers, politicians, judges, even as citizens. We exercise a certain authority and participation there. And obviously in the church as well. You maybe have authority in the church, and that's answerable to Christ. You may be an elder, or you may be accountable to and under the authority of the elders as a member of a congregation. Now, we're going to look at this same idea of divided sovereignty, divided areas of responsibility, from the perspective of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada, you might say our nation's top judge. And certainly her view is shared by a lot of other judges and politicians in this country. In her view, and we do see, reading her judgments, we see her recognize some areas of responsibility and certain degree of independence for families, churches, charities, schools, etc. She does see some value in giving them some room to operate. But in a speech that the Chief Justice gave in 2002, which is often cited by many lawyers, Her Honor stated that the rule of law exerts an authoritative claim on all aspects of selfhood, influencing local, community, and familial structures. And then she also says, the authority claimed by state written law touches on all aspects of human life and citizenship. It makes total claims upon the self and leaves little of human experience unaffected by its claim to authority. So you might paraphrase what she said in this way. There is not a square inch in the whole domain of our human existence over which the state, who is sovereign over all, does not cry, mine. Now, our Chief Justice certainly does believe that the state should carve out some free space for individuals sometimes. She says this, and she uses that language of carve out. The state, she says, can claim authority. It has authority over every area of life. But it should leave space where it can for us to exercise some freedom. But even that language, that the state carves out room for other spheres, implies that the state sits above and kind of owns those spheres. And our Chief Justice is, even in that respect, more liberal than a lot of other judges and politicians. So now, why does this matter, this whole understanding of sphere sovereignty? When we deny Christ's sovereignty, then we end up with problems. Now, any sphere may try to claim more authority than it rightly has, right? You can have powerful families who basically say, we get to write the laws in this town, and you cross us, you get punished. That's wrong. That's mafia style. I don't think any of us think that an individual family has that kind of authority just because they may have the wealth and power to do so. The church might claim that kind of authority. There was a time when the church put people to death and enforced certain moral and civil laws going beyond its jurisdiction. The Reformation really put the church in check in that way. Now today, of all the spheres, which seems to have the most earthly power? Seems pretty obvious to us that it's the state. It writes the laws. It seems to have, relative to us, unlimited financial resources, spends tons of money, has all kinds of departments and programs, and it also has a monopoly on the use of lethal force. But with all of that power, when the state denies the supremacy of God, the sovereignty of God, which is recognized in our history and our law, then we get problems. When the state denies God, it starts to set itself up as God. And we see this most clearly in officially atheist countries. We think of the Soviet Union, China, North Korea, real social Darwinism in Nazi Germany and in other countries. So, one of our roles, not just as ARPA, but as Christians, is to remind the state of what its responsibilities are and what the limits of its responsibilities are. Failure to do so can mean starting to lose the freedom to live as we ought. And in some senses, we have seen in Canada more broadly, the church abrogate that responsibility, Christians abrogate that responsibility, and we are paying the price.
That was the first part of the presentation. Following on that, John outlined how we are paying the price by getting into some specifics, including the Wall case that's now going to the Supreme Court of Canada, the one on church discipline, as well as an outline of the history of changes in family law in Canada. We plan to present each of those sections as features on the next two editions of Lighthouse News. But after John outlined the concerns, Mark Penninga took to the floor to talk about what specific actions ARPA supporters can take in response to the denial of God's sovereignty in our society. That comprises the second half of our program today.
I know it's true for myself, so I'm sure it's true for many of you, that when you hear about these developments, it's hard not to feel a little bit defeated. Yes, we believe that God is sovereign, but many of us might also conclude there's not much that we ordinary folks can do. You know, maybe a lawyer can do something about it in Ottawa, but what can we do? I'd like all of us to pause and answer this question. Do you believe that you have the ability to bear witness to the sovereignty of God, to our government representatives? Not just John as a lawyer. Do you believe that you have the ability to bear witness to the sovereignty of God? The answer is absolutely. All of us can. And that's one reason why ARPA Canada exists. We're here to help make it easy for each of us to be a prophetic voice in the public square. And tonight we're going to introduce you to our 12-step action plan. Our goal with this plan is very simple. It's that by next October, 1 year from now, hundreds of us from across the country will have built a relationship with one government official. If we put relationships first, it's going to have a far bigger impact than any other political strategy. I'll give you an example from down in Langley. Langley ARPA, this was 8, 9 years ago, I can't quite remember. They made a point of taking the time to build some relationships with the local government officials. One of those men was the mayor. His name was Peter Fassbender. They developed a good relationship of trust with him to the point where we held an evening, actually on a similar topic, it was on education. He was one of our speakers then. Peter Fassbender decided to run for the nomination of the Provincial Liberal Party, and he became the MLA for Langley. At that point, Christy Clark picked her cabinet. She chose Peter Fassbender as the Minister of Education. Now, Langley ARPA had a warm, positive relationship with the Minister of Education. That took about 10 years. Relationships require time, and relationship building is proactive. This is the strategy that we need to employ. Sending easy mail letters and doing court challenges has an impact, but it's usually short-term and reactive. As kingdom citizens, we're convinced that our political action needs to be informed by an eternal perspective. It boils down to living the calling that God gave us. Love our neighbor and love God. And that's the positive vision on which this 12-step action plan is built. Each of us can do this. I'm going to explain how. Each month, we're going to do one practical thing for a local government official in our area. Each month it's going to build on that. Now you can see that there's going to be a progression in the steps. It's going to start very simple. And it's going to work to the point where in a year from now, you will be able to simply talk with them face to face about a current issue from our perspective. Months 1 through 3, it's just about making a good introduction. We're going to begin in October right now, and our job is just to pick one government official. You can do a bit of research if you like, but just as valuable, if not more, is what you know via word of mouth. So if you put your ear out there, ask some questions to your neighbors or family, and you might hear that maybe one of them's a Christian who's been straying or struggling. Maybe somebody is a bit of an activist, you know, promoting LGBT rights, etc. Or maybe somebody's struggling in their health, or their spouse is really struggling in their health. There's real benefit to actually focusing on those who don't otherwise get to spend much time with Christians or who don't get much attention at all. That's month one. Step one, complete. Month two is going to be to introduce ourselves in a very simple way. You don't have to meet them. You can just send a thank you. And you can use the Easy Mail program. November, already complete. 5-10 minutes. Now month three takes us into December. In this month, we're going to do a handwritten card, something more personal than that email. A Christmas card. You can maybe include a picture of your family in it to make it more personal. So 3 months, 3 steps, very simple. In months 4 to 6, so the next 3 months, we're going to transition from impersonal, sending an email, to something more face-to-face. So your government official that you've selected, they're going to be at an event in town, in your community. And it might be that they've organized it, if they are the MP, if that's who you chose. So show up and just introduce yourself. Introduce yourself doesn't mean that you have to think ahead of time of some issue to talk about. Just connect yourself. Hey, we sent you a family card. Now, they'll probably remember because they don't get a lot of that kind of nice personal communication. So that's half of the year, just working towards saying hello. You don't even have to have a grasp on any of the issues. The second half of the year, we're going to look at months 7 through 12. And it's going to include more practical things to build on this. Some of the groups bring an MP into a home. You meet with them over coffee and dessert. You give them 20 minutes to speak on their behalf about what's going on. And then you get 20 minutes or more with your own questions. You're just building a relationship. Now, every time we do this, the MP or MLA or whoever it is, they're usually a little nervous themselves. And we're a bit nervous too. Like, we put word out in our church and community. We advertise it, but is there going to be 5 people who show up? It's a summer night. Well, this time 30, 35 people came out. And the MP says ahead of time, their staff says, just so you know, Mr. So-and-so has to be out of there by 9 o'clock. You know, he's busy, he's got important business. Well, they stay till 10, 10:30. Everybody stays. They have a wonderful time. We've done this probably 5 or 6 times, and not just Christians, with a variety of people. Now, the good news is that you'll be taking these steps with hundreds of others. It's not just yourself. If you're scared by this prospect, we're all in it together. We also have a full-time grassroots manager, Colin Postma, and it's his job to assist you. One way he'll do this is he'll give you an email each month with just a reminder. This is December, right? We had to send a Christmas card. It's a very small step, a little way to make you remember to actually do these things in our day-to-day life. Now, let's think about this. If we're doing this tour, and we're reaching probably between 2,000 and 3,000 people across the country, we all faithfully do this each month, that will be 24 to 36,000 acts of love towards individual government officials across this land. And it will never make the headlines. It won't get on CBC or in the Globe and Mail, but it will have a monumental impact in this nation. So let us testify to Christ's Lordship over all of life while we still have the time and the freedom and the health and the strength. The beautiful reality is that one day every single knee in heaven and on earth is going to bow before Him. But for us, we can already do so now. Thank you very much.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, Lighthouse News at arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.